So before we start the Mishnah here on Yud Aleph Amud Aleph, just a few words of background. We know that there's a machlokes, a controversy that we mentioned more than once in the past, whether ksubas d'oraisa or ksubas d'rabbanan. Either way, the sum, the amount of money written in the ksuba that she collects in the event that he dies or she receives a get from him, is identical. In other words, there's no machlokes about how much money she gets. And the basic chiyuvim of ksuba are either mana or masayim. Mana meaning 100 zuz, and that's in a case where she was married once before, it's a second marriage. And masayim in the case of a basula. Now, what exactly is a basula? Who is a basula? And there are so many different possible answers to that question. The simplest answer to that question, which we're going to see is not the right answer, but yet it's the most simple, straightforward one, is a woman that has basulin. And those are the basulin that we discussed at great length in the whole Sugya Daf Tes and Pesach Pasuach Matzasi. And he was motzi the basulin, and it was dam, and it was into Friday night, and if his melechas come, all that discussion that we had in the past. The other possible definition of basula is a woman who's never had be'ila before. She's never had a relationship with a man. Because those two definitions are not identical. You could have a woman who doesn't have basulin, but yet she never had a relationship with another man. She lost her basulin in an accident. That's called in the Gemara's language, mukat eitz, in the Mishnah's language. So she fell in such a way, and there was a smack from a piece of wood, or whatever, she lost her basulin. So does she deserve a ksubas masayim or does she not? On the one hand, she never had a ba'ul. On the other hand, she has no basulin. Yeah?
So the other way is also possible that she had be'ila but still has her basulin.
Correct, like in the case of Hatoy.
Right.
But for some reason...
be'ila alone doesn't make you...
So for some reason, Aaron, this is fascinating. One automatic loss of loss of ksubas masayim is be'ila. That no one questions. Meaning,
even if
a basula were left intact.
Oh, so is that right?
Yeah.
So we can't say that. So it doesn't work the other way.
Yeah. Logically, it should, right. But it doesn't. That's why I didn't spell that out for you, because that's going to come around the bend. Now, in addition to all of this, we have a third issue. And that is, you could have a woman who had a be'ila, but it's not a be'ila. What does that mean? The halacha says that a male is only considered halachically, again, this has nothing to do with biological reality, he's only considered roi lebi'ila, meaning his act of be'ila is only recognized by the Torah halachically if he's a ben tes v'yomechad. He's got to be 9 years in a day. So you can imagine the following scenario. She had a be'ila, in quotation marks, with a boy of 8.9, you know, so less than 9 years old. She lost her basulin in this episode, but yet halachically she didn't have a be'ila, but she did have a ma'isa be'ila. She had a ma'isa be'ila without a chal shem be'ila, if you follow what I mean. In other words, physically, from a perspective of mitzius, she may have had that which would normally be considered a be'ila. Had this young boy been 2 days older, you know, it would have qualified as a be'ila. Then we have another question. What happens if a woman is born non-Jewish, but she had gerus when she was a little girl? Now, how could she have gerus when she's a little girl? After all, she doesn't have das. She's not mature enough to accept upon herself mitzvahs. That's called what? Das Bezdin. Gerkat Matbilin Osal Das Bezdin. Now, what happens to this girl when she gets married? What ksuba does she deserve? The halacha always assumes that a gioris is considered a ba'ula. We don't know what went on over there, but we consider a ba'ula, and the ksuba is male. However, if she had a gerus before she was 3 years old, then by definition she couldn't have had a be'ila, because even if she had a be'ila, it's not called a be'ila al pidin. So that again is going to be an issue. So if she was a gioris past the age of three, let's say her biological father brought her for gerus when she was three plus, then she doesn't get a ksubas masayim, she doesn't get a ksubas pasul. Now, all these issues really hinge on the following question: How do we understand Masayim? Well, who's giving her Masayim? Obviously, the Baal is going to be paying the Masayim, or his heirs, right? If he dies. But who gave her the Masayim? Who gave her the rights to the Masayim? And if y'all ksubas doraisa, then the Torah defines ksuba as kimoher habasulos, and kimoher habasulos means Masayim zuz. And therefore, you're talking about a woman who, when she gets married, she's already been granted, or the Torah has already bestowed upon her that right from the get go, insofar as she's a basula, to get Masayim Zuz, Kimora Basulos. If, on the other hand, it's only a rabbinic invention, then the rabbis are giving her a new Schus Mamon, a monetary right to collect Masayim, which the Torah didn't recognize. The Torah didn't bestow upon her that right, because Ksuba as an institution is older Rabbana. And therefore, we can really formulate this or couch this in the following terms. Is Masayim something that she has rights to? You know, she has rights inherently to it. And therefore, you want to remove her status as a basula, and you want to undermine those rights, what we call lafkia is kus mamon. Then you have to create this new state called a ba'ula. And only then can we rip away from her or undermine her rights to Ksubas Masayim. If, on the other hand, the Rabbanon are giving her what the Arabs call and the Israelis adopted a chupar, right? And we're giving you a good gift over here, a new right called Masayim Zuz, then maybe you have to earn that, so to speak. You have to bring something to the table. And quid pro quo, you know, because you're giving something into this marriage, namely your basulin, will give you in return Masayim Zuz. That's a new right that she was granted, was given by the Chachamim. It's not something that inherently she's a basula, and until you prove otherwise, until you undermine that status of basula, she has rights to Masayim Zuz. No, we're giving her a new right. The Rabbanan are creating this gift, so to speak, of schus Masayim, and the Rabbanan might say, you know what, we have certain conditions here. If you don't have your basulin intact, for whatever reason, maybe, I know we're not judging you or faulting you, maybe you had an accident or so, you lost your basulin, so why should you get that special right of Masayim? We're not going to grant you that gift unless you're coming with basulin to the table. So the various scenarios of a woman who might be a basula, might not be a basula, she's a baula, but she's not a baula, you know, these gray areas and the twilight zone in the middle, all this might have to do with how we define Masayim. Is Masayim something that she comes to the table and by virtue of her status, she has rights to the Masayim, or no? We are granting her a brand new Zchus Mamon as a gift, so to speak, and that gift might be very conditional. And so forth. Any questions so far? I mean, just to...
What is the Lashon of the Torah? What does that mean? How is that understood?
The Torah says in the case of an ones or mafata, a man who had relations with a young girl, and she was a basula, that the penalty for that, the knas that we impose as a punishment, is that he has to pay her kimohar habasulas. The word mohar is translated in English loosely as a dowry. Uh-huh. A dowry is something that a woman brings into a marriage. And normally, back in the time of the Torah, the dowry was, let's say, Masayim Zuz. Well, again, we have to go through the process of Ones and Mafat. In the case of Ones, we force him to marry. In the case of Mafat, it's got to be, you know, a mutual consenting agreement. But the point is that if you hold Ksuba Doraisa, then we derive ksuba, the amount of ksuba, and the very fact that this from the fact that Torah recognizes that she comes in with certain rights into the marriage, and therefore in the cases of onus and mafat, the Torah says you have to pay for those rights because you really robbed her of the mohar habasulos, that special mohar, that special ksuba that's granted to a basul. Now, I want to raise another issue entirely here. And that issue is the following issue. Even after we establish that a woman is a ba'ula, it doesn't mean we knock her out of the box entirely. She still has rights to a ksuba, but just half of what a basula gets. Now, here's a very important question. he married her under the assumption that she was a Basula. And therefore she has rights to Masayim Zuz based on his assumption, his premise. Lo and behold, he discovers that she's a Ba'ula. He didn't get what he was banking for. Now, on the one hand, it means he can get away with giving half, you know, slash price. He gives her Mea instead of Masayim. But is there a logical possibility that he could go a step further and say, I don't want to give you a red cent. I don't want to give you a dime. Because I was fooled. I was misled. I thought that I was getting this great, you know, that, as we call it, a chupar, you know, getting a basula, and I was very happy and willing to pay the Masayim Zuz. Lo and behold, to my surprise, I find her to be a ba'ula. She's already had a relationship. And this introduces the concept called mekachtos. Now, the classical mekachtos is what we call in Hebrew shinui zehut achefetz, which means that I wanted to buy a table, and lo and behold, you delivered a chair. I'm not going to pay you for a chair. I didn't bargain for a chair. We had a contractual agreement on object X, and you sold me object Y. That's called shinui, a change in the zahut, the very identity, like we have a tudat zahut, you know, identity, of the chefetz. I'm not going to pay you for that. And then we get into some very minute details. What if he ordered barley and he delivered wheat? Are those two different objects? What if he ordered a white dove and he delivered a black dove? You know, is the color of the dove essential to the other? And if you want to choose one perek that deals with shinui, which perek in Shas would you choose? The ninth perek of Bava Kamma, which is called Hagozel Eitzim, because he stole Eitzim, and now he converted it into Caleb or whatever it might be. You know, he stole Tzemer and he converted to Begadim, so maybe he's Kona Bishinu. So that idea of identifying the object is very relevant not only to the laws of stolen objects and whether the Goslin was Kona Bishinu, he has to return the stolen object or not, but it's also relevant to Mekachtos. Okay, without further ado, I suggest that we, because I can keep talking and talking until I'm blue in the face, and I'm already getting a little blue. Okay, l'chaim on my anis tea. Anis is licorice, I think, in English. My stomach feels better already. I'm just kidding. Okay. Are we all on the same page? The bottom, second Mishnah, five lines up from the bottom of page Yud Aleph Amud Aleph. Hagadol Sheba Al Haktan. Okay. Now the word gadol here is a borrowed term. It doesn't really mean what you think it means. All over Shas, it means bar mitzvah, 13-year-old. Here, it means that as far as Be'ila is concerned, he's of age. He's not a minor. So what age are we talking about? 9 years old, correct? And that you'll see in Rashi later on in the Mishnah. We'll see it in just a minute. But first, Hagadol Sheba Alaktano. So he's a 9 year old. Technically it's 9 years and one day. But he had a relationship with a Ktana. Now what does the word Ktana mean? That's also a borrowed term. It doesn't mean she's less than bat mitzvah. What does it mean?
3 years.
She's less than 3 years old. So on the one hand, he's a gadol. But on the other hand, she's a ketana. Now, when it comes to a ketana who's less than 3 years old, that is not a meaningful removal, if you will, of her basula or of her status as a basula. And that's case number one, and we're going to see three cases in the Mishnah, all of which have the same din, ksubasa masayim, which means that she still retains her status as a basula. The flip case is vikatan shebal agdola. He was less than 9 years old, even though she's already past three. He's not capable of a halachic bia, and therefore she's not a ba'ula. And if she's not a ba'ula, then she has the status of a basula, and she gets Masayim Zuz. And finally, Umukas Eitz, she had some sort of fall, and as a result of this fall, it's called Nitkala Eitz B'makom Basuleha, and as a result, she lost her basulin, But she didn't lose her basulin through what?
Yeah.
Through a be'ilah. What's common to all these three cases is that there was no halachic be'ilah over here. Even though, at least in the third case, clearly she lost her basulin. And yet, ksubas ha'masayim. Does everybody agree with this? No. Divrei Rabbi Meir. So I would say up front that the definition of basulah, according to Rabbi Meir, is just the absence of the opposite. What's the opposite of a basulah? A ba'ula. She's not a ba'ula. If she's not a ba'ula, then ipso facto she's a basulah. Meaning, Rabbi Meir sees it as if she has inherent rights to be a basulah. She is a basulah, but I mean inherent rights to collect a ksubas basulah, which means masayim zuz. And until she has a be'ilah, you can't rob her of those rights. Now Rashi says the following: Habala ktana pchusu mibashalo she'ein biyosav biya. And now Rashi says sharei besulei chozrim, meaning even if she loses her besulim at that point in time, she's less than 3 years old. Nevertheless, her besulim will regenerate themselves, and that's where the halacha puts the measuring rod and says that if she's less than three, even though she had a be'ilah and he was already 9, he was capable of a be'ilah, nevertheless she still retains her status as a besulah. V'katan pachos miben teisha shavru kachonim ein biyaso biya. This is a little bit different. Here we're not saying something about the besulin coming back and regenerating themselves. We're just saying that he's not capable of halachic biya. The Torah doesn't recognize his biya. And therefore, for example, in this case, that he had a relationship with a girl who's already past the age of biya, she's 3+, nevertheless, she still retains her status as a basula because the Torah doesn't recognize his be'ilah. So even though he was Baal Agdola, she still retains her status as a basula. And how much does she collect? Masayim Zuz. That's according to Rabbi Meir. And Rabbi Meir takes it one step further. Well, if she retains her status as a basula unless she became a ba'ula, then Mukad Eitz is also Ksubas HaMasayim. And why is that? Because she did not lose her status as a basula. That's the sheet of whom? Of Rabbi Meir. Okay. So far, so good. So what are the three conditions, according to Rabbi Meir, that have to be met, all three of them, in order to make her into a ba'ula and forfeit her ksubas masai? Number one, as far as the boel is concerned, he has to be at least what? 9 years old. Number two, as far as the novellas is concerned, she has to be at least 3 years old. And number three, her loss of basulin has to be a result of what? Bila meaning what? A human bila. Meaning the human being, through his be'ilah, removes her status as a basula. But Mukad Eitz, which is not a human Maisa Adam, that's not called a Maisa be'ilah. And even if she loses a basula, she still has not forfeited her status because she never had a be'ilah. That's Rabbi Meir. So far, so good. Now here, I have a note. The Rashba in the name of the Yerushalmi. Rashi seems to indicate here that it matters not what he thought at the time that he married her. Meaning, Rabbi Meir is going to grant her ksubas masayim even if the Baal would have actually declared at the time of the wedding, I am marrying you as a basula, meaning under the das, under the assumption that you're a basula. Says Rabbi Meir, it's irrelevant. Why? Because she is a basula. What do you mean she is a basula? She doesn't have basulin. Certainly not in the case of Mukad Eitz. The answer is, halachically she's a basula. Al pidin she's a basula. So even though he stipulates that I'm marrying you as a basula, Nevertheless, he has to give her the ksuba masam. She is a basula. That's Rabbi Meir Shita. Comes along the Rashba, and he says in the name of the Yerushalmi that Rabbi Meir is talking about a case where he said nothing. Kidsha stop. But if he was mafarish and he explicitly made a declaration, I'm marrying you as a basula, then even Rabbi Meir would agree that she has no rights in the case of Mukat Eitz to a ksuba. Let me read to you the language of the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi writes that there's a concept here called Batel Chino. Now, Chino is a possessive a conjugation, a possessive conjugation of the noun Chen. The Yerushalmi now is introducing a whole new concept here. And that's called Chen. Again, loosely, again, I don't know if a better translation. What do you say?
Charm.
Well,
Chen.
Right, but how would you translate Chen into English? Grace. The reason why, says Yerushalmi, a Basula gets Ksubas Masayim is because of Chen. And now the Yerushalmi says, what we have to gauge is if an incident took place and as a result she lost her basulin, is that called bitul chen or lo batla chena? Chena with a mapik hey. Her chen has been lost or not? Says the Yerushalmi, the concept of chen, I'm embellishing it in my language, is objective. And the halacha will tell us what constitutes a basula as far as chen is concerned. And therefore, says the Yerushalmi, that even if he would say to her, I'm marrying you as a basula, and she turns out to be a mukat eitz, nevertheless, says Yerushalmi, lo batla chena. Chen is objective. And objective terms, Rabbi Meir is of the opinion that until she has a be'ila, meaning a human ma'isa be'ila, she hasn't lost her chen. And therefore, she still collects masayim. Then he wants to say,
but it's only in the case where she had relation, where there was be'ila. Is that
correct.
Any distinction?
According to the Yerushalmi, as quoted here in the Rashba, Mukat Eitz, according to Rabbi Meir, gets Ksubas Masayim because lo batel chena. She hasn't forfeited her chen.
In other words, the idea that she had Be'ila with another man, there's something that diminishes her status.
Correct.
But not in the same
correct. Then she's, the I hate to use the term, but she's second-hand merchandise, so to speak. She's already been had.
Right.
But if she has never been had to a man, she still has chen.
Right. With another person, there's a kind of bizayon in that.
Right.
But there isn't bizayon that she fell on a stick.
Right. Okay, I'm not using the word bizayon, but if it works for you,
no,
that's
fine. I'm saying it's the opposite of chen. I'm saying
good.
Something like that.
Pogum, a pagam, a bizayon, right. Whatever the term is. Okay. You know.
I'm saying the.
But that's the concept.
Right.
And therefore says the Rashba, according to the Yerushalmi introducing this objective category called chen, and Mukat Eitz according to Rabbi Meir lo batel chen. Therefore, he says, even if the Baal explicitly declared at the time of his wedding that I'm marrying you as a basula, she still gets masayim. Why? Because lo batel chen.
Right.
He can come along and yell and scream from the top of his lungs that, wait a minute, this is not what I bargained for. It's irrelevant. Why? Because we have an objective standard called chen. Says the Shita Mekubetzes, no. When does Rabbi Meir hold that a Mukas Eitz gets Masayim? That's only when he married her stam. But if he marries a Vipirei Shla, he says explicitly, Shunosa Aldashi Besula, is Af Rabbi Meir Sover the Ein Ksubasa Masayim. We have a machlokis here between the Shita Mekubetzes and the Yerushalmi, as quoted by the Rashba. The Yerushalmi, as quoted by the Rashba, says that according to a Meir, a Mukas Eitz gets Masayim, even if he said explicitly, declared, I'm marrying you as a Basula. The Shita Mekubetzes says, no. If He marries her stam. Then Rabbi Meir's shita kicks in. Then she gets masayim, even though he finds that he discovers her to be a mukasayim. But if he said explicitly, "I want a besula, and I'm marrying you al das kain," then even Rabbi Meir holds that she doesn't have rights to a ksuba of masayim because she is not a besula. It means that according to the Shita Mekubetzes, the status of a mukat eitz, according to Rabbi Meir, is a very complex status. Is she a besula? She's not a besula. And there's no clear-cut, absolute answer to that question. The Yerushalmi has an absolute answer, according to Rabbi Meir. Lo bat lachena. The determining factor as to whether or not she's a besula from Asayim is chen. And if we say, according to Rabbi Meir, that even though she's a mukat eitz, lo bat lachen, she's a besula. Geendikt. Finito. Ein al malut vakeach. The story is over. But according to the Shita Mekubetzes, it's not so. Rabbi Meir really has, I would say, almost vacillates back and forth. Is she a besula or is she not a besula? He has the right to say, if he explicitly declares it, that I want a full-fledged besula, meaning I want besula. That's what I'm bargaining for. If he doesn't say so, then we fall back into this objective standard and definition of a besula, which according to that man means as long as she didn't have a relationship with another man, with a man, I should say, right, then she still retains her status as a besula. But if he goes ahead and he says, I'm marrying you as a besula, well, we understand from that, and even Rabbi Meir agrees to this as the Shita, he wants a full-fledged besula. Not a basula that hadn't had a beer with a man, that she becomes a basula by default because she's not a ba'ula, but a positive kind of basula. What's a positive kind of basula? She has basula intact.
Why doesn't he say that then? When he stipulated not a basula, which is ambiguous.
No, because what was suggesting is that he didn't have to declare anything. This woman has never been married. His declaration adds some sort of subjective twist to it. I want something here, and I'm bargaining for something, and that's my contractual hischaivus over here. What is he bargaining for? After all, we have an objective standard, which if he doesn't bargain and stipulate otherwise, we assume that this woman who's not a ba'ula is a basula, and therefore the halacha grants her ksubas masayim. Why did he add, I want a basula? That declaration means he has his own definition of basula. He's no longer falling back to the objective halachic definition of basula. He wants a basula in the vernacular, you know, in the way people talk. I want a basula, meaning I want basulin. And he didn't get basulin. In which case didn't he get basulin? In Mukasets. And therefore, says the Shita Mekubetzes, if he went out of his way to stipulate, I want Pesula, what he meant to say was, I want Pesulin. And he could stipulate that. Meaning, the halach has objective, you know, determination, makes a determination as to whether or not she gets Ksubas Pesula Masayim, or she gets Ksubas Be'ula Vamana. That's all true and then, but that doesn't undermine his position. Like, for example, if let's say, you know, everyone in this room, with the exception of Evan, would pay me $1 for this thermos, right? But Evan says, I want it for 50 cents. So that's subjective. The objective value might be $1. Anyone here would buy it for $1. But you say you don't want it for $1. You're bargaining for half a dollar, you know what I'm saying? He's bargaining for a basula. The Yerushalmi, on the other hand, introducing the concept of chen, says that it's purely objective. And it's irrelevant as to whether or not he entered Stam or he entered B'mefarish. In both Stama and Mefarish, he is getting what he's getting. It's almost as if, Rabosai, the Yerushalmi says a woman has an inherent right to a Ksubas Basula as long as she has Chen. And what determines whether she has Chen or not? Did she have a relationship with another man? Okay, hopefully this will become clearer as we go along, but I just wanted to mention that at the outset. Fine. Chachamim Omrim, they disagree with Rabbi Meir, Mukat Eitz Ksubasamana, that she, in the case of Mukat Eitz, lost her Basulin, and therefore she's not a basula. The definition of basula, says Chachamim, say the Chachamim, is not the absence of a ba'ula, it's not the default. There's a positive definition of a basula. And until she has basula, unless she has basula, she's not a basula. Now, I don't know how to read this, if somebody could help me out. We had three cases in Rabbi Meir. One was Gadol Abala Ketana, the second was Ketana Katna Bala Gadola, right? So we had Gadol Abala Ketana and Katna Bala Gadola. And the third case was Mukar Eitz. In all three cases, Rabbi Meir Paskin, she gets Masayim. The Chachamim say Mukar Eitz Ksubasamana. Are the Chachamim only arguing in the case of Mukar Eitz? What's your impression?
It sounds like it,
only in the case of Mukar Eitz. Now, wait a second. If you're talking about the case of Gadol, Shebala, Ketana, she's less than three, Rashi says, what's going to happen to her? Basulin, Chozrin, they'll regenerate themselves. But if you're talking about the case of a Katan, Shebala, Gadola, here I'm getting very confused. What difference does it make whether he's 8.999 or he's 3 in a day, or he's 9 in a day? In both cases, I would assume that he took out her basulin. I don't know. Are you going to tell me there's some sort of magical biological change here that if he was less than 9 by a hair's breadth, then her basulin are intact, but if he was 9 in a hair's breadth, 9 in a day, then her basulin are gone?
We have to make some cutoff.
No, but I would say the following, that the determining, if you see, it's very good. If you're like Reb Meir, everything's very smooth. Because Reb Meir has a definition of ba'ula, and if she doesn't meet up to the standards of ba'ula, ba'ula by default she's a basula. If there was no ba'ula, and the halach is going to take over and determine what constitutes ba'ula, fine. He's 8.999, he hasn't celebrated his 9th birthday, he's not capable of a be'il according to the halacha, she gets Masayim. But if you're in the Chachamim's turf, the Chachamim say that once she's a Mukar Eitz, there was no be'ila, she lost her basua, and therefore she's not a basua, she forfeits her Masayim. No, then if I take that to the logical conclusion, what difference does it make if she lost her basua because of an Eitz, or she lost her basula because of this little whatever of a 9 year of an 8.9 year old?
It's even more, it's even stronger.
Why? Maybe it's even stronger because there's a human there's a human element over here. So again, I just want to reiterate my question here. If you're dealing with basula and ba'ula as halachic categories, which I'm sure is what Rebbeir is doing over here, then I understand very well. If he's less than 9 years old, halachically, he doesn't constitute a ba'ula. But if you're dealing with basula and ba'ula based on the mitzvahs, the physical reality, does she have basula or not? And therefore, the nafkamini treatment of Rebbeir and Chacham up front is mukar eitz. She lost her basula, but not through a ba'ula. So the Chacham say, well, if she doesn't come to the table with basula, she doesn't deserve this chupar that we spoke about, this great grand prize of getting a double ksuba masayim, then the same thing should apply if she lost her basula in any way, shape, or form.
But we're saying with the boy who's underage, it can't happen.
Why can't that happen? We're not saying it can't happen.
Can't, if you're young,
we're saying he doesn't have a chalushim be'ila. I mean, that's right. No gear to so many halachas. If he, for example, if he's baal shivcha charufa, so he doesn't have to bring a carbon carbon asham of a shivcha charufa.
We're saying the ability to take out her besunim. That's, in other words, a child, a boy at the age of 3 can't do it, and 4 can't do it.
After his 9th birthday, right?
And the halacha says, we brought in the doctors.
No,
and said,
but you don't understand.
By 9 years old, the boy
but,
can do
but,
it.
But Rav Aaron, that only makes sense if you're dealing in halachic categories. But if you're dealing in accidents, you know, physical accidents. For example, here's a classical case.
No,
a woman goes for a gynecological checkup. And she loses her basulin as a result of his checkup. Again, I'm not blaming him. He had to check and see if she has a mako or whatever he's checking for. You know, her life may be in danger.
Are there cases that the Beis Din checks that her basulin are at or that they've been removed, and that was relations with a boy under that age, and they still...
I'll give you a simple example, again, just to avoid all these complications. She admits that she has no basulin. Or alternatively, after this, 8.9-year-old boy had Be'ilut with her. The Dam Basulin is right there. We know that he found the Pesach Basulin. There's no issue. So my question is what's the difference between a physical eitz and whatever other object that removes habasulin, the utensil of the gynecologist, whatever, I don't know what it's called, I'm sure there's a name for it.
Why can't we say that Chazal were coming up at an objective age that generally a boy is able to remove basulin, otherwise...
But what happens if she lost her basulin? That's what I'm asking.
Let's put that aside for a moment.
Are
we looking at an objective age that a boy becomes a...
No, that's not what we're looking at. That's not what's happening. That's not what's happening.
Aaron,
look at the first Rashi. When Rashi says katan, you see four lines down, he says, Pachos mi ben tes, omru chachamim ein biaso bia. What does that mean? That he's not capable of removing a basulin? No, that's not what he means. Ein biyaso bia. That's a halachic statement that has repercussions all over Shas. Which means, for example, if an Ashes Ish has a relationship with a boy who's 9 years old in a day, she'll be put to death. If she has relations with a boy who's 8.999, right? And he's 5 minutes away from his birthday, she's completely exonerated from any punishment. And I can give you 50 million cases that fit into the same thing. That's called in the halachic universe, ein biyaso bia. Has nothing to do with whether he has the capability, the capacity to remove a basulin. His organ, if you pardon the expression, is no different than a stick. And it might be as powerful as a stick. Okay, I don't want to get into, let's try to avoid, embarrassing nitty-gritty details here. So I just want to point out to you, Rabosai, that there's a little bit of a problem here. It could be that when the Rabbanon say that Mukas Eitz Ksubasa Mea, right, Mana, what they mean is that anything like a Mukas Eitz, whatever successfully achieves this removal of Habasulim, that itself is, it removes her rights, her special Chupar, as we said, to a Ksubas, Mana.
So how do we understand that distinction? Why did Chachamim not say...
Mukar Eitz is a category. It's not a case. It's a category.
How would you fit it in with Ketana?
Okay, the question is, are Habsulim there or not? So if Habsulim are Chosrin, then it's not a Mukar Eitz.
It's two of the three.
Right, every case has to be judged under this category called Mukar Eitz. That's what I'm suggesting. Okay, Rabbi. Now here I want to point out something else. The second half of this Mishnah raises the following question. Is there such a thing as a chezkas bu'ula? Take a look at the second half of the Mishnah. Bisula almana grusha v'chalutza min ha-nisuin. The key word here is nisuin. The opening word in this bava of the Mishnah is bisula. What does that mean, bisula? Physically, she's a Nesua. But she's a Nesua. She's already been married. Classically, we would say if a woman's married, is she still a Nesua or not? It depends. If she became a widow while they were in the Erison state, which means presumably they never consummated the marriage, she's still a Nesua. But if they reach the state of Nesuin, then Nesuin means they live together as husband and wife, she's a Ba'ula. But here's a very strange case. A very tragic case. Her husband died on the day of the Nisuin, leaving her an almana, but she's a basula. He never got the opportunity to consummate the marriage. Or alternatively, grusha. Imagine, they were Nisuin, they never consummated the marriage, and he gave her a get. Now she goes ahead and marries someone else. What's her status? On the one hand, she's a basula. On the other hand, she's a Nisua. Says the Mishnah, unbelievable. Ksubasan mana. Here we made a whole big to-do, according to Chachamim, that her rights to a ksuba depend upon whether she comes to the table with basulin or she doesn't come to the table with basulin. If she lost the basulin in an accident called Mukas Eitz, that's it. She has no basulin. She doesn't get She doesn't get Masayim. But now we're talking about a girl who has Basulin. He never consummated the marriage. And yet, she loses her Ksubas Basulin. She only gets a month.
So you're showing me that the chain issue, that once she was under the chuppah with, in other words...
Excellent. Brilliant. According to Yerushalmi, this could fit very beautifully. The status of a basula is an objective halachic status, and the chachamim will determine when and if that halachic status applies. Does she have chayin? Does she not have chayin? But the fascinating thing is that if you take a look at Rashi min hanisuin, which is the second to the last line on the page, Rashi says, Kagon shenichnas olechupa, umes baila, and her husband died. And look at the next three words in Rashi. Rashi says, Bechezkas shalo nivala. And then look at the next Rashi. Ksubasa mana, im nises liacher stam, ksubasa mana, de bechezkas bu'ula kaima. Rashi seems to contradict himself. On the one hand, Rashi says, Bechezkas shalo nivala. On the other hand, Rashi says, Bechezkas bu'ula. And both of these Rashis are describing the exact same scenario. So what is her status?
It's not a contradiction, but it's just a thing.
Well, can you say about someone that cheskas lo nivala and then turn around and say cheskas bu'ula? Very strange. One of those two words or phrases has got to give way to the other one. You can't say A and not A at the same time. How can you call her a cheskas shalo nivala and then say cheskas bu'ula?
Can you say she's in the second Rashi that bu'ula is a term of art and the first one is just saying the Metzias whether she had...
In this case.
Yeah.
Excellent. There's no doubt about it, Evan. The first Cheskes Shlo Nivola is referring to this particular case. We know, or we have at least all the reason to believe, that Lo Nivola. And therefore when he married her, he assumed that she was a Basula. But nevertheless, she only gets a Ksubas Mana. Why? Here Rashi says Cheskas Bu'ula Kaimi, not Cheskas Bu'ula Kaimi vis-a-vis this woman, but Cheskas Bu'ula Kaimi by virtue of the Halach of Chuppah. Meaning there is some sort of Halach of Chuppah Nesu'in, and that Halach of Chuppah Nesu'in creates what's called a Cheskas Bu'ula, and she forfeits her Ksubas Masayim, and she ends up with a Ksubas Meh. In my mind, this is a tzarach iyun. I think I can only touch, you know, the surface of this Gemara, of this Mishnah. I don't understand the deeper meaning. There must be a deeper meaning to this Mishnah. The Mishnah is saying somehow that in order to have the status of a besula, let me put it to you this way. There's A and B that are antithetical. Two things that are antithetical. Nisuin or chuppah is antithetical to basula, even though she's a basula.
We're not saying it's a light plug. It's a light plug. We don't make any distinctions.
Again, if Rashi was saying low plug, he would have said low plug. Instead, Rashi says becheskas beula kaima. Rashi's giving you a halachic definition. He's not applying any sort of low plug kind of rule. He's saying cheskas bu'ula kind of
relations during the year.
No.
I don't know, because we spoke about the idea that that was.
No, Rashi already committed himself to say cheskas shelo nivala. You know that she didn't have beer. Rashi already committed himself to that. Right, Rashi is telling you that even though she's a basula, there's some sort of new halacha called knisa lechupa, and that halacha of knisa lechupa, otherwise known as nesuin, undermines or removes her ksubas masayim. I don't know the deeper meaning of this at all. Fine. Now I want to say the following. If you take a look at Rashi again a second time, he adds the word stam, the last line in Rashi. Why does Rashi add the word stam? What does Rashi mean by adding this word stam? And it's not just stam a word, pardon the pun. It's a very important word here. Rashi says ksubasa mana. im niseis li acher stam. Okay. So here I have a footnote based on, again, the Rashba, and he says the following. Hainu, what does Rashi mean? Shalo omra lo ha'isha adayin besula anochi. She did not turn to him and say to him, I am a besula, I'm still a besula. The us, in such a case, if it wasn't a case of stam, is ein la ela mona shebecheskas beulahi. Avalim omra lo ha'isha shadayin besulahi. The Nisais al Das came is Ksubasa Masayim. Wow. All this is from a three-letter word, stop. He builds castles on this word. When does the Mishnah say that Besula Shen Nisais is Ksubasa Mana? That's in a case of stop, says Rashi. Nothing was discussed between him and her. There was no exchange, verbal exchange. She didn't say a word. They got married, and the marriage was becheskas beula, as Rashi says, because stam, because she didn't give him any reason to think otherwise. Becheskas beula kaima, right?
I'm saying without saying anything, you assume
that she's a beula. That's called becheskas beula.
Why is that?
Because she had a marriage relationship. Again, we're not. That's the part of the sugya, as I mentioned before. I don't want to repeat myself over and over that I don't understand. So you can't ask me. Okay, but somehow nisuin creates something called a cheskas besula beula, which means she forfeits her ksubas masai. That right now, that's axiomatic. We cannot understand that. However, Rashi stipulates stam, meaning here's the flip side. If she tells him, what you're getting here in this marriage is a besula, even though there was nisuin, she gets a ksubas masai. And Rabosai, I think this comes back to the point that we made before. Namely, that it all comes down to what he's bargaining for. And if he decides to enter into this marriage under the premise, under the assumption that she's a basula, because that's what she told him, and lo and behold, she turns out to be a basula, she did not mislead him, then he understood that he's paying her a ksubas basula. Alpidin, we said that chupa and nesuin creates a cheskas pe'ula, and therefore she forfeits her ksuba. He comes along and he says, you know what, I'm accepting the terms of agreement as you spelled it out. She said to him explicitly, I'm besua, and therefore she gets masayim in such a case. That's what Rashi means by adding the word stam. Says the Rashba, however, the Yushalmi writes that once she had nisuin, this will sound very familiar, Aaron, ksubasa mana mishum shebatal chena misha shenichnasa l'chupa ulefizeh afilu hisna lo beferish besulahi v'nim seis besula mikomakom ein lachen uksubasa mana. The Rashba records a machlokas here between Rashi and Yerushalmi. According to Rashi, if she tells him beferish explicitly, I am a besula, and it turns out that in truth she is a besula, she was a besula, he pays masai. According to Yerushalmi, it's batal chena. What is the Yerushalmi pushing here? What's this agenda called batal chena?
Why should she make enough to when it's after Kedusha after Erusin? She should also have lost the Chayin if it's after Erusin.
I don't know. I can't answer that question. somehow erusin is still a separation between a husband and a wife. She's still in the rishus of her father.
In our world, is there between a broken engagement and a marriage?
You need to get.
Okay.
Correct. So from that perspective, she's an Eishes Ish, and we should say Batel Chena. The Yerushalmi says no. It's Nisuin, which maybe means Nisuin is already, you know, the night of the consummation, if you follow that. Right? So therefore she loses her chen. Okay? Okay. So I wrote myself a note here. To suggest what's going on. Rashi holds that, I don't know how to say this in English, Bats Musa, you know, in her very essence, she is a Besula. But she had Nisuin. Nisuin creates what Rashi calls a Cheskas Be'ula. Okay, that's the way Rashi understands it. She, through her verbal declaration, could change that cheskas besula and convert it into a cheskas besula. That's only because biatzmusa, in her very essence, she is a besula. She's a besula, but there's a cheskas beula. The cheskas beula creates this kind of assumption in a stam situation, which means that the assumption is that she's a ba'ula. But since she really is a basula, if she breaks that assumption by explicitly declaring, I am a basula, then she gets Masayim Zuz. What we're saying now about Masayim Zuz according to Rashi is not that he accepts upon himself some sort of contractual hitchayvut, you know, I hereby commit myself to pay Masayim Zuz. That's not what's going on over here. What's going on over here is that we're changing her chazaka from a cheskas bu'ula to a cheskas besula. And since we have now a marriage that's predicated on a cheskas besula, and she is a besula, therefore she collects Masayim Zuz. That's according to Rashi. The Yerushalmi, on the other hand, holds that once she had Nisuin, she's mufka from the status of Besula. It's no longer Besula bi'atzmusa, but rather the Nisuin themselves are mafkia the shame Besula, as far as Ksuba is concerned, and all she can get is Ksuba's mana. And therefore, the shame Besula, according to the Yerushalmi, is not dependent upon the Metzius, on the reality of whether she is a Besula or not, but on this halachic, as we said, objective standard that she has to have, in order to have a shame Besula, has to have a situation where she never got married, she never had Nisuin. She was never Nichnas al-Chupa. But once she was Nichnas al-Chupa, says Yerushalmi, then objectively, although she's physically a Besula, but al pi din, she's no longer a Besula. So Vatzmusa, she's not a Besula. And therefore, even if she tells him, I am a Besula, the Yerushalmi says he never accepted upon himself some new hischaivus to give him a Masayim Zuz. But rather, the Yerushalmi pushes the agenda that, does she deserve Masayim Zuz or does she not? According to Rashi, she is a Besula. Nervos, she has a Cheskes Beul. If she tells him, I want to set the record straight, I'm a Besula, that changes the Chazuk, and now we have a Cheskes Besula. If there's a Cheskes Besula and she is a Besula, then he pays Masayim Zuz. Meaning, there are two dinim over here. There's one din in terms of, is she a Besula, is she not a Besula? There's another din of, what was he assuming when he entered into the marriage? What was his understanding? What was his contractual agreement? Rashi says that in a case of Stam, even though she is a Besula, his understanding is that she's Becheskas Be'ula. And therefore, despite the fact that she's a Besula, she can only collect a mona. But if She tells him explicitly, I hereby declare that I am a besula, changing the cheskas besula, then mimanav shach, she deserves masayim. Under the first din of, is she a besula? The answer is, yes, she's a besula. Under the second din, what kind of chazaka does she have? The answer is, she has a cheskas besula. And therefore, he entered into the marriage understanding that he's committed to pay her masayim zuz for ksuba, for ksuba's besula. So mimanav shach, he has to pay masayim zuz. That's Rashi. The Yushali, on the other hand, holds that she's not a Basula. Why isn't she a Basula? I mean, she has Basulin. Nobody's denying that. There was never a consummation of the original marriage, but nevertheless, she had Knisa L'chupa. And Knisa L'chupa is Mafkia, her status as a Basula. So even if she would now say to him, you know what? I am a Basula, he's not willing to take upon himself a brand new Eschaivus out of pocket to pay her an extra Maya Zuz. Because Halpidin, she doesn't deserve Me'azuz because she's not a Basula. Rashi holds she is a Basula. The Yerushalmi says she's not. So Rashi's operating within the framework of Cheskas Basula versus Cheskas Ba'ula. And if in a case of Stam, she has a Cheskas Basula, if she's Mefarish, that I am a Basula. What did I just say? If she's Stam, she has a Cheskas Ba'ula, I meant to say. I don't know what I said. But if she's Mefarish, that I am a Basula, she has a Cheskas Basula. But she is a Basula, and she has rights to Masayim Zuz. All we have to make sure is he understands those rights. And her explicit declaration will clarify for him what exactly her rights are. According to Yerushalmi, on the other hand, she's not a Basula, because as far as Ksubas Masayim is concerned, to be a Basula, you have to have Chen. And once there was Knisa L'chupa, she had an Nisuin to another man, she lost her Chen, she now becomes a Ba'ula, and that's the end of the story. She tells him now, at the time of the marriage, I'm a Basula, fine. But he's not going to take upon himself Chiyuvim that go above and beyond the law. We have no reason to assume so. That's what I wrote here.
Whether she says as she's a note. Or not, the chen, she can't avoid the issue of chen.
Correct.
That can't.
That's an objective.
It
issue.
Overrides the chazaka, but it can't.
Correct.
Override,
because again, even before we discuss what his understanding is, we have a first stage, you know, a primary stage, and that is she a besula, she a ba'ula, as far as ksuba is concerned. Rashi is of the opinion, operating without the Yerushalmi,
right,
that she's a besula. Ella what? She's becheskas ba'ula, okay. He enters into the marriage thinking that, anticipating she's a ba'ula, and therefore he's going to only give her a mayor. But if she clarifies and sets the record straight, he understands that he's marrying a basula. She is a basula. He understands that she's a basula. He has to pay masayim. Mashenke called the Yerushalmi holds batel chen by virtue of the first marriage, which reached the stage of nisuin. And even though physically she's a basula, halachically she's already a ba'ula. Okay. Just one second. Yeah. Okay. Now where are we? Are we on Amud Beis yet?
Yeah.
Yeah. The Ein La Hen Tainas Besul. What does that mean? Since we've already established that she gets a mana, he can't come by and say, you know what? I expected her to be a Besula. According to Rashi, this is beautiful. Because Rashi is holding that our Mishnah is talking about a case of Star. And therefore, she has a cheskas ba'ula. If he married her with a cheskas ba'ula, he doesn't have a tithes pasul to say, wait a minute, I was surprised here, I was caught off guard. I found that I have a pesach pasuach. No. You weren't caught off guard. Every indication led you to believe that she was a ba'ula, and almanas came, you married her. So don't tell me, oh, I thought she was a pasul. Again, what would be, according to Rashi, if she stipulated to him, I am a Basula, that's a whole different story. Now we're operating with the Stam case, as Rashi indicated before, and therefore he has every reason to assume that she is a Basula. That she is a Ba'ula, Cheskas Ba'ula. Now here notice that Rashi on the second line here on Daf Yud Aleph Amud Beis adds the phrase Mekach Tos. What does he want to claim here in this Tainus Pesul? Normally, a Tainus Pesul means, why should I pay you Masayim Zuz? I didn't find you to be a Pesul. I found the Pesul Pesuch. I only want to pay you a Meah. That doesn't make any sense in this context, because she's only demanding, or he's only paying a Meah. So what was the whole discussion here about Tainus Pesul? Tainus Pesul means, I don't want to pay you a Ksubas Pesul. I want to pay you a Ksubas Be'ula. That's a Tainus Pesul, Pesul Pesuch Matzazi. But here, he married her only with a Chiv of Mana. So what's this Tainus Pesul all about? So Rashi indicates Mekach Tos. Mekach Tos means that when a man assumes X and he finds out Y, he thought he was buying this merchandise and he ends up, he was delivered a different merchandise, he wants to back out of the whole deal.
Right.
What his claim is, and that's what the Mishnah is coming to exclude, is that I don't want to pay you a single dime. That's called Mekach Tos. Now the Mishnah goes on. Hagiores Vashvuya Vashivcha Sheniftu v'nizgayru v'nishtachu yiseros al b'no sholom sholom v'yom echad. In other words, their gerus took place in any of these three cases after she was 3 years and a day. Is ksubasa mana, all she can claim is a mana. That's called again a cheskas b'ula. Here's a cheskas b'ula because of the fact that she was not Jewish. Is ve'ein lahen tainas b'sula. He can't claim mekach tos. I anticipated that she would be a b'sula, and I found her to be a b'ula. Okay, we have about 5 more minutes to Ma'ariv. Let's see what we can at least begin here. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. Katan she'haba al agdola asa mukareitz. This was the discussion that we had before. He's a katan, which means he's 8.9, if you want to dramatize it. And he had beer with a gdola, which means she's already past the age of 3. Asa mukareitz. Now again, that's not relevant to Rabbi Meir, because Rabbi Meir holds even a Mukareitz gets Masayim. But it's very relevant according to Chachamim, because Chachamim say Mukareitz gets only a mana. This could have other implications, by the way. For example, a Kohen Gadol is only allowed to marry a woman who's a Besula. And he's not allowed to marry a Mukareitz. This woman, who had Be'ilo for a Katan, who's less than 9 years old, is no longer Besula, and a Kohen Gadol would not allowed to marry her. That's what Rashi says. Nehi di'ein bi'oso bi'a, mi'u lo gara mi'eitz ha'nitka. Right? His organ is not worse than a tree, a piece of wood. U'l'rabbanu de'pligya mukareitz k'subasamana, v'chein linyan Kohen Gadol, d'snan lo yises mukareitz, Hanami Asirale. She's Asura to a Kohen Gadol. So it's fascinating to me that in the context of the Chachamim, the definition of Besula versus Be'ula is a universal definition. It's not just limited to Ksuba, does she get a Mono Masayim, but it applies even as far as her objective status in Isu Vehet and Kol Tarkula. Is she a Besula or a Be'ula? Nafkamini Gabi Kohen Gadol. Ki Amrisa Kami de Shmuel. When this statement of Rav was transmitted to Shmuel, Amar Shmuel responded, "Ein mukat eitz bebasar." Rashi says, "Ibeula lo havya mukat eitz nami lesa." You know, when it comes to basar, there are two possibilities: either she's a beula, which means she had a beilo, which the halacha recognizes. Or she's not a Be'ula, and she remains a Besula. But she's not a Mukareitz. Mukareitz applies to anything but Basar Ha'adam. Do we have Basar Ha'adam here? Interesting, Rashi has an extra word. Okay, fine. But Basar Adam. In other words, I think what Rashi is telling us here, according to Shmuel, is that the definition of a Besula, as far as getting a Ksuvas Masayim, is not the mitzias of habesulin, but rather a certain halachic status. And the halachic status of a be'ula, depends upon basar versus eitz. So according to the Chachamim, who say that a mukat eitz already loses her status as a basula, that's a result of not the removal of the basulin, but of the halachic status of ba'ula. Meaning that somehow, for some reason, and don't ask me why, because again, we're going through the sugya, according to the Chachamim, dafka mukat eitz makes her into a ba'ula. But basar, even when it removes the basulin, doesn't make her into a ba'ula. So again, my first definition of basulin ba'ula in the Chachamim's frame of reference would have been, does she have a basulin or does she not have a basulin? It all depends on the mitzvahs. If that be the case, then what's the difference between basar and eitz? But my second definition of my second definition of Basul and Ba'ul is a halachic definition, and within the context of the halacha to create a chal shem be'ila, we are a chalik between basar and eitz. Okay, Mr. Shem will continue next week.